last day's discussion. Any?
No, I have no questions at the moment.
Very good. Marvelous.
You said on Thursday, and you were talking about the relationship between guru and disciple, that if there was this complete love and affection, then the guru could do anything. But it seems that if there was that kind of love that didn't demand reinforcement, the guru wouldn't have to do anything. The guy's already in life. But, all right, that's okay. Looking at, you cannot create that kind of love. You can't go and order it from...
You cannot create and that kind of love in the disciple.
No, and the disciple...
No, the guru is all love.
And what I mean is from the disciple's point of view, looking within, and you see that that love is not there, you can't summon it up from nowhere.
No, so what do you do?
That's a good question.
So what do you do?
You keep looking.
No, you can't keep looking for love. I'll give you a crude example. If you don't love your wife, nobody can create that love in you. And you can't force yourself, nobody can force you to love your wife. But how does the love arise? Not by looking for or telling yourself, oh, I must love my wife, I must love my wife. No, you can't love your wife like that. But suddenly you realize, I'm not talking about the divine love, just Mr. and Mrs. Loving. The Mr. realizes that he has certain needs, food for instance. And suddenly he realizes that this girl has to prepare my food, so I better smile. Isn't she marvelous? Isn't she a darling? She cooks my food. That's it. Now love arises. Or there is a sexual need. Or there is a sense of insecurity. Or there is something or the other. So, you don't look for love. You look at your situation. Your own situation, not the guru's business at all. Your own predicament.
Isn't that selfish?
Pardon, sir?
Isn't that selfish?
Oh, let's see. It may be selfish. You look at your own predicament. And first of all, you realize I am so thoroughly confused and I can't resolve this confusion by myself. Whatever I do, I can't resolve this confusion. As I go on trying to solve one problem, second problem, they multiply. Which means I am looking in the wrong direction. Which means I don't know where to look for this peace of mind. I don't know where to look for what I am looking for. I don't know where to look for what I am looking for. Then you come down and meet somebody who apparently doesn't have these troubles. Then you want to know, what do you do? Then that love arises spontaneously, because like food and sex and all that in relation to your wife, this peace and happiness and enlightenment are available through him. It's not that he is going to give it to me, but it's a double negative situation. He is not going to give it to me, but I cannot find it without him. Right? Square, very simple it is. He cannot give it to me, but I cannot find it without him. Once that is realized, then this affection, love or devotion or whatever it is, happens spontaneously without looking for it. You cannot look for love. Even the other thing, for instance, then the guru may tell you, not only me, but you must love all, which means, how am I going to love all? Then he says, all right, ahimsa. If you cannot love all, at least make sure that you do not hate anybody. Because if you hate anyone, which is the Bible, yes? If you hate or if you have done this even to the least amongst my children, you have done this to me. The rationale being that if you are capable of hating anyone, you are not capable of loving the Guru. Isn't that right? Simple. If there is a jar of honey, and if somebody sticks the spoon into it and pulls out, and what comes out is a spoonful of cow dung, you can be sure it is not a jar of honey. You cannot say, well, you know, just two spoonfuls. It's a whole bottle, right? 16-ounce bottle. This is just two spoonfuls of cow dung there, making a big fuss. It's one of those unfortunate things. So, if there is hate, jealousy, fear and all the rest of it, in your heart, towards anybody in this world, then you are not loving your guru or your god or whatever it is. It's absurd. It's a hypocrisy.
Can that love and hate be on a transcendental level compared to a material level?
Sir, if it is transcendental, you are no longer talking about it.
Yes.
So it is neither love nor hate.
Whatever that is, it's all pure love anyway.
Right. Transcendental, it's all pure love. It's only within the dental there is some problem. Within the dental is the tongue. What you're talking about, that's the problem. Don't worry about that. Worry about yourself.
Okay, look at me. I don't.
Andre might corner you by saying this is selfishness. But if you are not able to solve your simple problem of love, how are you going to be unselfish? The key lies here. What other people, not necessarily spiritual, have said, and what even some of the spiritual teachers have said is exactly correct. If you do not know how to love one person, how do you know how to love all? And here is one person who is of vital importance to your life, in your life. Because you are looking for something fundamental, more fundamental than food, more fundamental than sleep, more fundamental than everything else. Peace of mind and wisdom. Now, if there is the feeling that, well, I can get it from reading these books, then you will not love the Guru and you don't have to love the Guru. Yeah? If you feel that I can get it, yes, I sit and meditate and Jesus Christ or Bhagavan comes and talks to me and he will guide me. Very good, marvelous, go ahead. You won't love the guru or anybody, and you don't need to love anybody. What for? You go looking for all these things and you find that these things don't work. Only then it is possible for you to truly surrender. The same thing applies to God. It's impossible to surrender to God unless if there is even a sneaking suspicion of a thought that it is possible for me to figure out what to do or to work out my salvation. I have not tried that one, Tantric Yoga. So perhaps if I try that, all my problems will come right. If you have even a sneaking suspicion of a thought like this, you cannot surrender. It's impossible. That will haunt you. So in the same way, you cannot be totally devoted to the Guru if there is a sneaking suspicion that, well, what is the need of going to this man? He's a nice fellow, good. As long as he's there, it's all right. But I think after all, what he says is what is all written in these books. Why shouldn't I read these and find the answers to my questions? That is selfishness. You understand me? That is selfishness because it feeds selfishness. It feeds the self. It feeds the self-image. It is possible, for instance, if you adopt that, supposing you say you pick up the Bible and say, I can find all the answers to my questions and problems, solutions to problems in this book. Then you go on, you know, day and night. And a stage might come, my God, all the answers are here, but I can't get it. You crash your head against a stone wall, cry, shout, yell, then surrender happens again. Then there is a revelation. That is what is supposed to have happened to this Smith, the famous Mormon founder. Joseph Smith, what's his name? So in order to, for the surrender to happen, one must have worked very hard and followed even a silly little lead towards the solving of our problems. It's not neither devotion nor surrender, which is the intensest form of devotion, happens to a lazy person. You must have worked very hard at solving the problem. Then the mind must come to the absolute conclusion that no, it's not possible for me.
And then that's the only point at which you can say
I can surrender.
There's a guru.
Yes.
Love and surrender be the same.
Same.
So until that point, any idea of a guru disciple relationship?
It's only idea. It's only idea. No, it's only idea. You said it. Any idea of guru disciple is just an idea. That's why, even though the word guru is often used in a very dubious and devious ways, even in the scriptures, it's good to know that there are two words, acharya and guru. Acharya is teacher. You can have hundreds of them. But Guru is somebody who is special. That is our definition, yes? Once again, we must be very clear about our definitions. The word Guru is used in very many different senses in the scriptures. If you read the Ramayana, the word Guru is used in relation to an elder brother or a father. Guru in that sense meaning a big man. But we are defining the word Guru as someone who directly or indirectly brings about enlightenment. Right? Gukarascha, andhakarascha, rukarascha, nirodhaka. If that is not there, then he is not the Guru. He is a teacher.
Guru light.
Guru is light.
Right on the shadows that you
Thank
are,
you very much. Thank you very much.
Sort of the final big jump of
whatever it is. It is the light.
Yes.
Guru is the light. Right. And if you regard Guru, if you consider that Guru refers to a personality, then that personality directly or indirectly makes this light shine. Right? That's our definition. If that is not there, then that person is not the Guru. If in his presence or in your encounter with him, this light does not shine, then that person is not the Guru. If in the presence of that person, in your contact with that person, this inner light has begun to shine, the inner light is the Guru. But since in some way that fellow was responsible, you sort of, by courtesy, extend that courtesy onto him also. If you become pregnant, you become pregnant. It's because of your fertility that you become pregnant, right? But because somebody else was involved just, momentarily, you also look at him and say, all right, you've got some share in it. The fetus is yours, entirely yours. That fellow has nothing to do with it. But remotely, sort of indirectly, that is what the Guru does. The Guru merely sows seed, and that seed becomes fruitful only if you are fertile. Right? Otherwise, it's of no use whatsoever. I said a couple of days ago, this person might have been the Guru of all humanity minus one, the one being you. he might have been brought about enlightenment to the entire humanity minus one. That's you. In that case, he is not a Guru. He is not your Guru.
Guru is only at that point of enlightenment.
Correct.
That's the Guru.
Correct.
Up until then, you can say teacher.
Your teacher. A great teacher, nice teacher.
You're not a guru, just the story. Is it possible to become enlightened without a guru?
That's if you had followed our. Can I ask, pursuing the same analogy that I gave this other Susan, can you deliver a baby without conceiving one? That's it.
Then you'll start something.
Huh?
If she does, she'll start a great religion.
So, I'm saying that regardless of the man involved in the situation,
the Guru was not necessarily to be a man.
No, wait. No, no, not at all, sir.
No, I won't.
Not at all. Not at all. Not at all. Not at all.
You're a human being.
No, no. Yeah, exactly. It is the conception that is the Guru. I am comparing the conception as the Guru. That is the Guru. That is the fruition of this seed is the Guru.
So it doesn't have to be an accepted, socially accepted Guru. I mean, there could have been...
There is nothing socially accepted. The experience is the Guru.
Yes.
The experience of the truth is the Guru. The revelation of the truth is the Guru.
Yes.
And therefore, as our great Guru pointed out, it may be a man, it may be a woman, it may be, according to the Upanishad, in one of the Upanishads, it is said, when the Acharya asks him, who taught you? You shine with an inner light. And this disciple says, other than human beings, sir. It could be anything. A swan taught him something, a cow taught him something, fire taught him something. It needn't even be a sentient creature. Maybe an insentient thing like fire or water. Or a lightning. A flash of lightning. And another man, he became a very great mystic and devotee and poet and all that. This man was living with a prostitute, Chintamani. And he had plenty of money. And it seems at one point she was really fed up with him, the pest. So one day she turned upon him and barked at him, said, if only you loved God with the hundredth of the love you are showering upon me, you would have been blessed long ago. And he looked at her and said, Namaste, thank you very much, you are my Guru. Because you are directing my attention to God. You have awakened something in me. You have awakened something in me. And later he composed a great poem. The first verse is addressed to her. Chintamani Vijayate Guru Mama. God bless Chintamani, my Guru. Anybody can be your Guru. Provided that thing happens in you. In the Yoga Vasishtha also it is said, Darshanat, Sparshanat. By looking at you, by touching you, by talking to you, this an understanding of the reality must be generated in you. If that is possible, that is the Guru. That is the teacher. Deshikaha, Guru. If that is not there, it is not there. He is a boyfriend. Acharya. He is not the father of your child. So what we are talking, I mean, Guru, there is somebody, I won't even say where, he used to sign Gurudev Swami so-and-so, you know? Right? People call him Gurudev. Then if you go to India, all these, the little reverence you have to the very concept of Guru might be blown. Because first of all, the word Guru or Gurudev occurs in government records. You pick up the telephone directory, there are about 200 Gurudevs there. Gurudev Singh, Gurudev, Gurudayal Singh, Guru, 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 whole 20 pages of Gurus. And then somebody tells you that this is not a Guru of your Guru business. He is Mr. Guru. do you know the man who is a minister in Mauritius called Haridev Ramcharan? Were you there when the when the big statue was opened? Were you there at the time? No. He also spoke Haridev Ramcharan. One of his brothers is called Gurudev Ramcharan. So, and then you go around, even in a little place like Mauritius, the pandits there are called gurus by his own clients. He's got a certain clientele, and all those people call him guru, our guru. Then they will tell you, he drove my guru away. I beat him and kicked him out. So, he demanded more money than I could give. It is ludicrous thing. The guru is a very sacred and most beautiful thing, if only we can appreciate it, understand it. And even if later on you became, I don't know if what I am saying makes sense, even more enlightened than the Guru, let us sort of grant that such a thing is possible, even then you would be grateful to the Guru for the very simple reason that he made it possible. Whatever was possible after that was due to him. That love and affection will still be there. If it was there in the beginning. But it will not be there, I repeat. You cannot love a guru he doesn't become a guru till you love him and something else happens to you. There can be no love unless you had struggled hard, you were serious and earnest, and you found it impossible to work on your own and find the solution to your own ultimate satisfaction. And then this thing happens in your contact with somebody. Till all these stages have been through, there cannot be this devotion, the unquestioning devotion to the Guru. Then there arises what you call fate. That, what he says is right, he's right, not must be right. Must be right has a doubt filed away. You understand me? He must be right. This is your friend Shirin Mansoor's expression. The Guru must be right. Must be right means I don't see it is right. I can't see it is right. But he must be right. Because he's the Guru, he must be right. And day after tomorrow, if someone else tells you something else and you find that is better than what the Guru said, it's gone. No. There comes a stage when something in you immediately responds to it. Whatever he says is the thing that is, it is. And even if you don't understand it, you say, my God, I don't understand it, but he's right. I don't understand it, but he's right. Go on, go ahead.
Without understanding, can there be such devotion?
Yes, sir.
There can be.
Sure.
So you have...
Is that just...
But that... ...that, and in his contact or through his help, you understood it. You got rid of it. You solved it. That really and truly blows your mind. And from there on, you work. There is you still work as an independent being, entity. But when you are working on your own, you are not so confident. But when he tells you something, he's right. The initial impact is so great.
You think that, like, reading from sort of dry scripture, not dry scripture, but reading sort of literally, the impact would, you still get an impact, but to actually, to have it...
Sorry, you get an input, not an impact.
An input.
you only get an input.
The input is there, but coming from a guru, I suppose, it just has that...
It is not merely coming from the guru, sir. It touches something within in your heart. Where there is darkness, where there is cloudiness, where there is non-perception, suddenly... If you have not had it, it's very difficult to explain it.
But that's not enlightenment, is it?
It's perhaps an awakening, perhaps an opening, perhaps something. Mm-hmm. But that is not very different from enlightenment.
Mm-hmm. I was thinking about what you were saying about, you know,
again,
everything.
Continuing this the baby analogy. Conception is not the baby, but the baby doesn't arrive without the conception. So this, the guru experience is the conception. It's precisely 100% true in all aspects. West, no, Eastern, all turn. Yes, Western, Eastern, North and Eastern, all turn. And this, need for a father is so great that even when there is what is an immaculate conception, you still suggest that God is the Father, or the Holy Ghost is the Father, right? So, that is possible. It is possible that you get the awakening or enlightening experience through a human or non-human agency, or you may spontaneously experience it, in which case you blame God for it, or glorify God for it. Then God is your guru. Correct? If it happens through a human agency, you can consider him your guru. If suddenly somehow it occurred to you, into Buddha it occurred, without any human agency, then God is the guru. Or the enlightenment itself is the guru. The difficulty arises, I suppose, because when you... this is the ordinary expression I am using again, which I don't like. When you accept a guru, you are supposed to obey him, you are supposed to be devoted to him, you are supposed to do what he says. That's a bit irksome. Funny, isn't it? And that is only because you haven't had this experience which makes that person your guru. If that experience has happened, then there will be no further argument. And therefore I bring the argument on the full circle. Till that happens, you have no guru. And must I love this man? You may or may not. Must I obey this man? You may or may not. Sure. Because the guru has not happened. The guru has to happen. When it happens, the rest is smooth sailing. And when it does not happen, it doesn't happen. There is no question of compelling obedience and compelling devotion, compelling love. It seems absurd.
But trying.
Trying is self-compelling, compelling oneself. And since one, according to me again, one cannot compel oneself, it's hypocrisy and you don't do it. Half of you wants to obey, half of you wants to disobey. Right? Or, in other words, since you cannot be divided into two halves, in reality, what it amounts to, sometimes you obey, sometimes you don't obey. And if you are honest and examine, watch yourself, then you realize that in both cases you are obeying yourself. When it is convenient, you obey. When it is inconvenient, you don't obey. So, looking for a guru or loving the guru is not selfishness at all. That is the beginning of total unselfishness.